1 Chronicles chapter 15. I'm going to just focus on a couple of verses there. Verse 1, David made himself houses in the city of David, and he prepared a place for the Ark of God and pitched a tent for it. Now, in Hebrew, the plural can sometimes refer to what is called an intensive plural. That is, one singular thing may be spoken of in the plural to mean the one very special thing. So you read, for example, about the bloods, plural, of Messiah in Isaiah 53. Well, blood isn't plural, but it means the special blood. And so it is here, I think. Houses in the city of David could mean that he built himself a very special, grandiose house. And in fact, it became known as the city or the citadel of David because it had David's house, his grand palace. And so he makes that, but he pitches a tent for the Ark of God. And of course, you feel in this verse the uncomfortable parallel between building his own house and simply pitching a tent for the dwelling of God. And I think that dis-ease with that situation remained with David. And so later he says to God, look, this isn't right, that your ark lives beneath a tent and I dwell in a grandiose house. So his motivation for wanting to build the temple was rooted, I suggest, in guilt, rather than by any sense of God's glory. And so the reply of God to him through Nathan is, don't build me a house. I don't live in houses made with hands. I prefer my mobile way of being beneath a tent. I never asked anyone to make me a house. And yet David tries to force through the project. And in the end, that temple, as we know, was finally destroyed, although God did dwell there. He went along with the idea of a temple as he went along with the idea of a human kingship, although he considered it to be a rejection of himself. So it was motivated initially, I think, in guilt by David rather than by love of God. Now, it's very difficult, isn't it, to know your own motives, but could it not be that a certain amount of our good works, of our generosity, I think particularly our material giving, could be motivated by guilt? And I don't think that is a good motivation. Then you look at your motives. Why did I, put that money in the pot? Or why did I, whatever, do this or that? And you think, well, I don't know. I can't sort out my own motives. And no, you can't. As Paul says, 1 Corinthians 4:4, I know nothing against myself in my own conscience, but I am not thereby justified because the Lord Jesus is my judge. And so, what can we do? Well, we read in Hebrews that the conscience is cleansed in the blood of Christ. What precisely that means is very, very difficult to work out, but I suggest it means something along the lines of people like you and me who see this verse in 1 Chronicles 15 and think, wonder how much of my good doing is out of guilt. What are my motives? I don't really know, don't really understand. We are to come to Jesus and to tell him that, and to trust in the saving work of his blood, and his spirit, if we are open to it, will cleanse our spirit or our conscience, our motives, whichever word you wish to use. But he will do that because it is not possible by any sort of act of intellectual self-effort to cleanse your own motives, nor to understand them in that sense. But we can ask him to do this, and he will. Now, while we're here, you just go down to verse 12. When he does bring the ark in, he says to the priests, sanctify yourselves that you may bring up. And the RV margin says lift up. It's got almost the idea of resurrection. That you may lift up the ark of Yahweh to the place that I have prepared for it. Pretty clearly, Jesus is alluding to this in John 14, where he says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. So we are represented by the ark. And when he says, sanctify yourselves, he, of course, alludes to that at around the same time when he says in John 17, that he has sanctified himself, and he prays that we might be sanctified. What does this mean? As the ark was to be brought up or lifted up to the prepared place, so he says, I have prepared a place for you. And straight after this, when he does bring the ark in, he then, in 1 Chronicles 16, the next chapter, gives bread and wine to the people. It gets very relevant to us, doesn't it? So I think that what he's saying, what the Lord was saying by way of his allusions, was that when you break bread, you are celebrating the fact that you, as the ark, have been brought into the place that I have prepared through my death. Because he says to them, look, I'm going away now. And he meant, I'm going to the cross to prepare a place for you. So then, I think that the idea is that in prospect we have been saved. You think of Jude when he talks about God having saved the people out of Egypt, afterward destroyed them that believed not. If you asked any individual Israelite, are you saved? Well, yes, I am. But, as we know, he who continues to the end shall be saved. But whatever may happen tomorrow, the issue is that right now, we should be able to say that by his grace, I will be saved. By his grace, I will be there. And I think that that is the reason for our ability, therefore, to rejoice confidently in the hope that is set before us. Judgment Day is therefore no longer this terribly open question that we don't know the outcome of. We are assured right now, although we cannot say whether I shall keep my faith tomorrow, we're living in that sense for the moment. For this moment, we can rejoice in sure hope of the glory of God.